Skagway artists applaud a state resolution supporting the legal use of ivory. And the first witnesses testify in an Excursion Inlet homicide trial. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Abby Collins. Those stories and more are up next. Last week, Alaska lawmakers passed a resolution that brings concerns of state ivory carvers to a national level. The resolution, passed by the Alaska Senate in February and the House in April, urges the U.S. Congress to pass legislation exempting legally acquired walrus, mammoth, and mastodon ivory from ivory bans. Bruce Schindler is an ivory carver in Skagway. He works with fossilized ivory.
Well, I'm just very happy to see this happen. You know, this is taking the Alaskan ivories from a statewide thing and putting it into a national stage. The defense of our ivories, the defense of the native ivories, and actually native lifestyle up on the northern coast. For us, it's economically very, very difficult. For the natives up on the Arctic coast, it's culturally devastating.
In 2016, the Obama administration implemented an almost complete ban on the commercial trade of African elephant ivory in the U.S. In recent years, some states in the lower 48 have gone further, implementing bans on the sale, use, and possession of all ivory. Alaska natives are permitted to harvest walrus ivory under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. The use of legally acquired ivory is an important part of native culture. For native and non-native artists, it's economically important as well. Candace Cahill is a silversmith and beader. In Skagway, she and her husband work with fossil ivory, mainly making jewelry.
The significance of this specific resolution is having the entire state of Alaska behind the artists and the people who are using legal ivory as a way to make a living and survive. And we need to have the ability to continue to work with the material.
Cahill says ivory bans in other states where her work can't be sold have negatively impacted her business. The resolution from the Alaska legislature has been sent to President Trump and members of the U.S. Congress. Two brothers from Kansas say they separately heard Mark DeSimone admit to shooting Tony Rosales. The first witnesses took the stand Monday in the homicide trial underway in Juneau Superior Court. DeSimone is accused of shooting Rosales in Excursion Inlet in May 2016. One of the brothers, Seth Bradshaw, came up to do some hunting, fishing, and crabbing at William Young's two cabins in Excursion Inlet. Young's employees, Rosales and DeSimone, also went out about the same time. Bradshaw testified he was checking on a generator near the back of the cabin when he heard two back-to-back gunshots from near the front deck. Inside the cabin, DeSimone walked toward the back as Bradshaw went to the front.
I passed him and I said, "What happened? What happened?" Because as I'm passing him, I see Tony laying on the deck, face down, with blood out, blood in front of him. And I asked him what happened, and he said, I shot him. It's all my fault. I shot him."
Seth's brother Samuel testified that he was bear hunting some distance away from the cabin when he heard the two shots, one right after the other. He then heard his brother calling for him to come back to the cabin. Heading back, Samuel Bradshaw passed DeSimone walking slowly in the opposite direction and heard him mumble something.
I asked him, "Well, what's going on, Mark?" And he said, "I was screwing around, I shot Tony."
That was the polite, radio-friendly version of what Bradshaw said he heard. He quickly clarified that DeSimone's utterance actually included an expletive. Both brothers testified that DeSimone eventually came back to the cabin. They and the rest of the hunting party kept watch on him until Alaska State Troopers arrived. Rosales' widow, Maria Gonzalez, and William Young also testified Monday. In addition to the cabins in Excursion Inlet, Young also owned the Jewel Box store in downtown Juneau. Rosales started working there as a jeweler in 2012. Young said he considered Rosales like a son and contemplated turning the store over to him. Young recalled starting as an employee of the Jewel Box in the early 80s when he first met DeSimone. In May 2016, DeSimone came back to Juneau looking for work and did some day labor for Young just before the hunting trip. Young also testified he owned the weapon used to shoot Rosales. Young said he loaned the .41 caliber double-action revolver to another member of the out-of-state party because he didn't want to deal with the hassle of bringing firearms aboard flights to Alaska. A federal official has closed subsistence fishing for king salmon on the Stikine River near Wrangell. That closure lasts from May 15th to June 20th. Concerns over king salmon stocks are impacting fisheries throughout Southeast, including Upper Lynn Canal. Earlier this year, Chilkat Chinook were designated a stock of concern. In 2017, strict management strategies were implemented throughout Upper Lynn Canal fisheries. Subsistence, sport, and commercial fisheries expect tough restrictions again this year. A group of 16 people from around the state gathered in Petersburg for 5 days talking and learning about salmon. They're part of a salmon-centered fellowship with the Alaska Humanities Forum. As KFSK's Angela Denning reports, they're trying to find new ways to keep Alaska salmon sustainable.
Alaska is a huge state with a lot of varying opinions about a lot of different things. But one thing that most people have in common is salmon. It touches almost everyone's life.
Salmon is a defining factor in the culture of Alaska.
Cameron Perez-Verdia is the president of the Alaska Humanities Forum. He says while salmon is important to many Alaskans, it also comes with very different viewpoints.
It's a flashpoint of conflict over a lot of difficult issues that we have in Alaska.
There are many Alaskans interested in harvesting salmon, but there are only so many to go around, particularly king salmon. And science has only come up with so many answers as to why their populations have been declining. Perez-Verdia says the Alaska Humanities Forum sees it as salmon have a people problem, and in order to find solutions, they need to call on the state's differing voices to come together. A few years back, they created the Salmon Fellowship to grow a network of people from around the state to talk about it. There are two cohorts of 16 fellows each, selected from dozens of applicants from all over the state. Petersburg's gathering is the very first time the fellows in the second cohort are meeting each other. Petersburg resident Chris Norris is part of the first group of fellows. She's been in the seafood industry for about 40 years. Her fellowship wraps up in October, but she believes that the network the process created will continue in the future.
For me, it just comes down to trying to solve problems. We can't do it in a vacuum. You know, here's people where you have this common goal of sustainability of salmon.
Perez-Verdia says when traveling to places like Petersburg, the fellows get an immersion experience.
To connect with community, to talk with industry, to really make sure that their learning and their development is connected to real people in real life.
And with time, he says, hopefully the fellows can help Alaskans come up with new and innovative solutions to keeping salmon sustainable. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
For KHNS News, I'm Abby Collins.